Welcome to Asimov's Spotlight. Here now, another story selected from the pages of Asimov's science fiction magazine.
Kim is a mutant who can control the mind of anyone she smells. She's so powerful, she's forced to endure therapy sessions with other mutants in lieu of jail time. Find out what happens when their doctor takes treatment a little too far in Tilt, read and written by Leslie Watt.
Their therapist, Dr. Esten, stands on a platform encased by a shatterproof plex cylinder that makes him look like a man inside a bottle and gives him room to gesture when he wants to make a point. His platform begins its slow descent as his patients are led one by one into the session room and strapped into a circle formed by 7 recliners. Brown pleather, still warm from the last session. No time for the disinfectant on the armrest to evaporate. Dr. Esten's platform rotates slowly and takes about 20 seconds to reach bottom, where it will hover for a couple of feet above the floor until it's time to ascend as the session ends. The rotating platform was put in this year to allow the therapist the illusion of eye contact with each patient, and because Dr. Esten is a bit of a showman. He wears a stage mic and an Armani jacket he clearly thinks looks as good on him as it did on the model. He's gripping his phone in a way that suggests he's a little nervous. It's only his second time leading group therapy, so everyone understands how he feels. Kim used to feel that way before every interview, until she lost her security clearance and was demoted to a supervisory position in the cafeteria. Despite all they share in common, the 7, as they call themselves, hate each other about as much as they hate this facility. Most also hate their therapist, but those same people like the cafeteria food, so their thought processes are suspect. They are here against their will, without an easy pathway out. They begin this session as they begin every session, bickering about their placement in the circle. Staff developed a system to prevent patients from gaming things in order to score the most coveted seats. It doesn't matter where a patient stands in the line, doesn't matter if they arrive late or early, they will sit where the orderlies tell them to sit. A patient might end up in the same seat 3 times in a row, only to be led to a different seat the 4th. This is upsetting to anyone who needs consistency, but it's still safer than when patients were allowed to pick their own seats. Kim has been working on ignoring small daily slights, but she is really annoyed today because she's sandwiched between a guy with a foot fetish and a woman named Amy, who is known as Patient Zero and is always brought in hooded. "Did someone shit her pants?" Kim asks. It's clear that someone did. Kim knows it's Amy, who today sits to the right of her. Kim sends Amy a subliminal mind memo to share her thoughts about smell.
"You slut!" Amy screams. "How dare you talk to me like that?"
She points the skinny finger in Kim's direction. There's more agreement with Amy's accusation than Kim was expecting from the others. She could make them take her side if she wanted, but it isn't worth the effort.
"Think about why you're all fighting over 7 identical recliners," says Dr. Esten.
He fiddles with his app until a spray of lavender essence fills the room. It's hard to know if the fragrance calms as intended since it doesn't work on Kim. They use it because they can charge for it, and it looks better than stunning the patients with a cattle prod, like in the old days.
"I'm not going to tell you blood-sucking pervs anything about what I'm thinking," shouts the big guy to Patient Zero's right.
The others call him Barney because he is very big and sort of purple.
"You just want to know the deets so you can turn my life into a best-selling movie without giving me credit."
"Yeah," shrieks Patient Zero. This is America. We should be able to sit where we want.
Though not the most articulate nor educated mutants Kim has ever met, these two speak the truth. It matters where they sit because it matters who they're looking at and who's looking back. It matters whether they look out the window or face the wall. It matters what they can't see behind them, not to mention the chairs are not identical. Kim's is lumpy in places that align with someone else's bony prominences. It stinks of Noxzema skin cream, a smell she's found repugnant since her pregnancy 5 years earlier, something she surely mentioned on the intake form. She can smell and taste the menthol, eucalyptus, and camphor, smell them individually and in various combinations. Judging from the pockmarks on her chest, patient Zero has occupied this lumpy-ass chair long enough to impregnate the pleather with her stink.
Take off your shoes, my lovely.
Foot guy leans in Kim's direction. He's close enough she hears his whispers, far enough away the others don't. His superpower is making people dance, which sounds harmless except he's responsible for the deaths of many sandaled people who found themselves dancing off cliffs, piers, and walkways. He's watching Kim's feet with creepy intensity. She knows he is aroused because he smells of Cowper's fluid, those first few lubricating drops, which means he tastes of diluted chlorine. Despite what he'd like to believe, Kim finds it rather unpleasant.
"Please take off your shoes," Foot Guy says.
"You wish," Kim says, which has the effect of making him wish this even more than before, smell worse than before, taste loathsome. That was careless of her, so she does something that will be difficult to trace back to her, and makes him slip his hands into his pants, makes him roll back his head and moan.
"This is unacceptable behavior for group therapy," their therapist says.
When Dr. Esten touches his phone screen, two burly orderlies burst into the room.
"There," he says. "Him."
The orderlies remove Foot Guy from the session.
"We don't have much time together. Don't be distracted.
Let's focus on the hard work of psychotherapy," Dr. Esten says, somewhat persuasively, even with his power muted by the shatterproof plex cylinder. While not that great a therapist, he's still better than the last guy. Eventually, he gets through most of his patient defenses, quiets down most of them.
"You're starting to make real progress," Dr. Esten says.
"Let's keep going." His tone has softened from scolding dad to loving mother. "Now find the knob on the side of your identical recliners and pull up the riser," he says. "Got it? Good. Now close your eyes. Now take a deep breath. Now let your breath out slowly. Now another breath. Now let it out. Now imagine being a baby and your mother holding you close."
"What if my mother dropped me?" Barney asks.
Kim plays along, eyes closed, breath slow and deep, but she is thinking the very same thing as Barney. The answer, as many would agree, is that you get rid of the mother. Kim opens her eyes and sees Barney staring at her, lip curled downward with a spit dewdrop clinging to his chin.
"F you," Kim sends in a mind memo. "In your dreams," Barney mouths back.
He flips the bird, but thankfully it misses Kim and hits the nylon carpet, which sizzles and melts and stinks up the room. The platform is currently positioned in a way that lets the therapist see only Barney's part of the exchange. Dr. Esten fiddles with his phone. Hard leather restraints clamp around Barney's wrists. It reminds Kim of elementary school, where only the last punch to the gut is witnessed, so the instigator gets away with it. She was the one who always got away with it, until she didn't.
"This isn't fair," Barney says. Kim smiles. "Let's all make the most of this session," says Dr. Esten. "Think about your goals, not just what you want in the moment."
"What I want in this moment is to carve my initials in your face," says Patient Zero.
There's a reason why Amy is hooded. The others call that reason Therapist Zero. May she rest in peace. Dr. Esten touches his app and gives patient zero enough ketamine to make her snore.
Now close your eyes. Now deep breath in. Slow breath out.
Group therapy is useless and boring, an endless cycle of starting over, usually at the close your eyes and breathe part. If Kim can just get through this session, she will earn her 9th and 10th coins and will be allowed a supervised call with her son. She wants that enough to put up with this nonsense. She lowers her eyelids to fool someone hovering a few feet above her. It's better to look down at nothing instead of trying not to see anything at all, so she doesn't try to keep her eyes tightly closed or the therapist might see her lids tense and pulse.
Good work, everyone, says Dr. Esten. Now, imagine a mother so strong she won't let go.
Like God? Asks the woman who scored the window seat where Kim hoped to sit.
Like God, but not like God, says Dr. Esten. Not everyone is a believer here, and we want this to be a safe place no matter what you think.
Nobody understands what he's talking about. Why would you need therapy if you thought being strapped into reclining chairs while listening to a man drone on about taking deep breaths made you safe? Must be some other focus group he's thinking of. This group is for mutants who are avoiding jail sentences just by being here. All 7 live in a constant state of terror. All 7 are trying to get through each day without killing anyone, including themselves. They used to think of themselves as the 8, if you counted Therapist Zero. Of all their therapists, she was the one Kim best related to, cared for. She had shared to the group that after being abused by her mother, she had worked for years to find her own voice. Kim will never forgive Patient Zero for causing their therapist's death. Kim wishes she were the kind of person who didn't hold a grudge. Instead, she's the type of person who resents everyone who's ever crossed her, which makes sense if you think about how the word resentment comes from the French ressentir, which simply means to feel. Kim feels so much she can taste it. It's a disquieting, often nauseous feeling. At the moment, Kim resents the woman directly across from her, who can look out the window while Kim is stuck looking past window seat woman to a white wall. When she was a kid, her mother thought Kim had an eating disorder because she wouldn't eat the food on her plate. Kim was hungry, but her mother's meals reeked of cigarettes and perfume and bourbon. Kim could not bring herself to eat them, even if that meant a beating. Kim's pediatrician sent her to a clinic specializing in treatment for failure to thrive, where she lost even more weight because she couldn't stand the smell of plastics and excrement and cleaning solutions and recycled air. A PET scan showed a lesion in the posterior fossa. It took a specialist to diagnose her with hypergousia, meaning Kim was a super smeller and super taster. The specialist prescribed zinc and a structured exercise program, neither of which helped. What the specialist didn't know, because the whole mutagen thing was still new, was that Kim's boosted senses brought out other powers. What nobody understood, not even today, was how easy it was for Kim to persuade another person to do her bidding once she had tasted their scent. When Kim was a kid angry about her mother's neglect and cruelty, she made her mother drink an extra shot, smoke a second cigarette, and so, in the unsophisticated problem-solving of children, made her mother abuse and neglect her even more. She's since become much more cunning. She visualizes window seat woman pulling the lever to lift her feet, hears the mechanism snap, imagines window seat woman standing and the off-balance chair falling on her. A sign that therapy may be working is that it dawns on Kim, window seat woman's small transgression does not warrant death or disfigurement. Kim is able to scale back her anger to mild annoyance before it escalates to the level of inflicting harm. Since coming here a year ago, she's learned a lot about taking control of her thoughts and actions. Instead of harming her, Kim will make window seat woman spill her ice cream on dessert night. It's such a devious punishment, it makes Kim smile. Be nice, Kim, mind memos window seat woman, who says, "That shirt sure is a good color for you." "Now your head feels heavy," says Dr. Esten. Now your shoulders are like weights pushing you down. You feel completely relaxed, he says. Breathe in. Breathe out. Now I'm going to tilt everyone back 10 degrees, about as much as you normally tip back your head for a sip of water. You can do this, I know you can. Kim holds her breath, clenches her jaw. I can do this, she tells herself. I know I can. She works to relax into the recliner, but the moment the seat slips back a notch, it takes every ounce of self-control not to scream. Excellent work. You've each earned a coin. Dr. Esten touches his phone, and a pachinko machine image is projected in front of him. He fiddles around with things a little more until 6 coins drop and land in 6 individual slots labeled with patient names. He points to each slot and nods as if to remind them he's the one awarding the coins. That's 9 coins, Kim thinks. Only 1 more to go. Okay, Dr. Esten says, let's try again. Now I want you to take a deep breath and slowly release it. Now close your eyes. You must learn to trust authority figures so we can help you rejoin society. You want to see your families again, don't you?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes, the patients respond. Kim's son must be starting kindergarten soon. She wonders if he's learned to ride a bike.
You can do this. I know you can.
I can do this, Kim tells herself. I know I can. Except that something feels off. The strangeness of the feeling swirls around her consciousness until she recognizes that it's Dr. Esten's voice directing things inside her head, and that this can-do affirmation does not come from within. Knowing it makes it harder to relax than before. Maybe he is more powerful than she gave him credit for. When the tilt mechanism shudders and the seat lurches backwards, she fights against the straps that restrain her, and she falls backward. She cannot stop herself from screaming. The others scream in solidarity. Their terror breaks her fall. Kim opens her eyes. Everyone is fighting their straps, trying to break free of their chairs. Barney's face is the color of bulging veins. She didn't mean to cause a chain reaction, but then she never means to incite mayhem. Her goal since coming here was to learn to manage her emotions. She's gotten closer, is almost there. Therapist Zero told her therapy takes time and to be patient. Dr. Esten is angry, though he tries not to show it. He injects each patient with a bump of ketamine. In a few moments, all feel more relaxed. You know, he says, you mutants have a pretty bad rap. Not many doctors are willing to work with you. You really need to start taking responsibility for your actions if you ever want to get out of here. I'm sorry, but that little display means none of you are going to get your second therapy session coin today. For a while, the ketamine blunts the impact of his statement. Barney looks at Kim and says,
should I?
And Kim mind memos, yeah. She doesn't really know what he's talking about, at least that's what she tells herself. But she isn't surprised when Barney rips free of his restraints, picks up his recliner, and hurls it with one flew over the cuckoo's nest flourish towards Dr. Esten, before his platform can ascend to safety. Kim is neither sorry nor shocked to see Dr. Esten knocked headfirst into the shatterproof plex cylinder surround. Funny how that works. The cylinder is protected, the head not so much. She just hopes Dr. Esten doesn't have children who will miss his calls. Well, okay, she mind memos Barney. An idea forms. What would happen if the lunatics took over the asylum? Why do people always assume that would be a bad thing? Unlike most of their former therapists, she is unafraid of mutants, perhaps because so few possess as much power. No reason she can't get results this facility has only dreamed about. Meet goals that would earn everyone bonuses and earn her recognition and a promotion. Respectability. Kim won't need to be bottled up inside a shatterproof barrier, won't need a descending, ascending, rotating platform. She just needs to know enough about the other mutants to know how they tick. Her plan is not entirely self-serving. Kim can assist her mutant colleagues to develop achievable goals and then force them to achieve them. cure them of any inclination society deems undesirable. She could become the Dr. Phil of mutants, maybe run for office. She will plant the idea of taking over the therapist position the next time she's brought up before the board for review. As security guards burst in to apprehend Barney, Kim makes sure one breaks away and releases her from her bonds. "You okay, miss?" he asks. She tells him to take her to the cafeteria and buy her a cappuccino. He tells her he's happy to do that. She looks out the window at the garden, a place she hasn't been to in months, and tells everyone there to back the F away as she approaches the door and walks outside to sip cappuccino on a shaded bench. "What do I want?" she asks herself. "I want money and respect. I want the right people to fear me. I want my son back, and I want his father out of our lives, perhaps permanently." "I can do this," Kim mind memos herself. When a nurse walks by, Kim persuades him to give up his phone and come back in 10 minutes to retrieve it. She dials her son's foster care number and is able to persuade the provider to put him on the line. He asks her how she is and when he'll get to see her. She asks if he's excited to start kindergarten, asks about the supervised visits with his father. "I miss you, Mommy," he says. "I'll come get you as soon as I can," Kim tells him. She mind memos herself a to-do list. She needs a job, needs a house, needs a court date and a judge she can manipulate. She tilts her head back and finds pleasant fluffy bunnies in the clouds. By the time the nurse catches up to her to reclaim his phone, she has finished mentally updating her CV.
Thanks for listening to Asimov's Spotlight, a feature of Asimov's Science Fiction Magazine. If you liked what you've heard, consider subscribing to Asimov's. We're available in print and digital. And please stop by again next month to hear another exciting story chosen from our pages.